Rick Ball, the play-by-play voice of the Calgary Flames on Sportsnet West, is joining us. Rick, day one of Stampede. This stings, man. This is real.
It hurts. It's an institution. And not having it, I mean, it just puts an exclamation point on how crazy the last couple months have been. But I guess you got to do what you got to do. Hopefully we can get things back to normal at some point here, because I think most of us are going pretty stir-crazy, even though it's sort of starting to get back. But to lose the Stampede, yeah, that's a kick to the nether regions for sure.
Yeah. You are an adopted Calgarian now. This is where you call home and have for a while.
Six years.
Yeah. Had you been a major participant in Stampede prior to that? Do you try to get out of town? Do you like to bask in all that is Stampede? What's your philosophy? Do you hit it hard for a couple of days, then leave? How do you do this?
Well, I'm a distinguished older gentleman, so the days of whooping it up are well past this this gray beard. But before I lived here, I never actually experienced a Stampede in any serious way, because I was doing football for 11 years. So every time I came, it was for football, and I didn't have a chance to get away because they play when Stampede is on. So it was hard to make it out. So I've definitely gone a few times since I've lived here, and it's really a cool event. So, I could see if I was in my 20s. Are you kidding me? It'd be heaven.
Yeah. I wasn't going to go there, but you mentioned it. You were the longtime voice of the BC Lions. What are your thoughts on the CFL in these tough times? And do you worry about the future of the league, or do you see this as a league that is only always ruled out and yet always survives like a cockroach?
Yeah, somehow it rises off the mat like it's like a phoenix from the ashes, just when you think it's dead. But I always worry about the CFL. I did, I caught it. I did football from 2004 to 2014 before I came to Calgary. And I hit it at just the right time. The CFL was on the upswing and people were coming back. The TV ratings were massive. The Lions were really successful. So it was actually quite fun to be involved, but it's always teetering. There's such a narrow margin between that league going out of business and staying alive, and it needs a handful of rich guys with deep pockets who love football to keep it going. And David Braley and you can complain about some of the things that have happened, and you own two teams at one point and all that stuff, but God bless him. If not for his bank account, where would the CFL be? And he's not getting any younger. And, you do worry about that. The Flames own the Stampeders, and their ownership group has done a great job. And that team has been one of the gold standards in the league in terms of how it's run. But at some point, if somebody's not there to, write checks at the end of the year, if they need to, where's the league? And now it's survived for how long? The Grey Cup's over 100 years old. So it keeps ticking along. So you always think there's going to be a way it's going to make it, but it's going to be really tough this year for the league. If they do wind up playing, it'll be a short season. I'm hearing it maybe as few as six games potentially. Mm. It's, you always worry about the CFL. Any unexpected adversity, you worry because, the teams are operating, many of them, at a loss anyway. You worry if that might be the final straw. I don't think it will be. The CFL just always seems to survive, but I'm always concerned about the long-term prospects for the league, and certainly, like a lot of things going on right now, you worry that you wonder how the league's going to get through this, like many businesses that operate on narrow margins.
Tell us about some of those, I don't want to say glory days for the BC Lions, but I think people would forget how recently the BC Lions averaged over 40,000 people a game, and I believe had a miserable start, 1-5 or 0-5, and went on to win a Grey Cup at home. That you would have been there for those years, right?
Yeah, they were 0-5 and 1-6 that year that they won the Grey Cup. That was 2011. It was the year that they reopened BC Place after they renovated. So they played a season and a half in that temporary stadium at where Empire is at the P&E grounds, and then got back into BC Place. Yeah, it was interesting because I started, like I said, in 04, and Bob Ackles had just come back from the NFL to run the BC Lions, and Bob was the GM of the BC Lions in the 80s when the CFL was. People forget about this, but in Vancouver anyway, and, you know, we're talking in Calgary here, but in the 80s, the Lions were more popular than the Canucks were. The Canucks were getting the building was half empty for hockey, and they were getting 50, 60,000 fans a game for football. So Bob Ackles was there when the team was red hot. He got hired by the Dallas Cowboys, went to the NFL for a couple of decades, came back to take over as president of the BC Lions in like 2003, and walked into the stadium to watch a game and saw 15,000 fans there, and almost started crying. And he did a great job, like literally just hit the ground, going to meet and greets and pancake breakfast to sell the BC Lions, and was probably him and Wally Buono were the single biggest reasons the Lions were got back on the right track. But the whole league took off at that point for some reason, and it helped. The NHL had the lockout that year when they missed an entire season, and fans needed something to look for in this country, and they went, I think, in a lot of cases, got back into the CFL again. And in Vancouver specifically, that was the Casey Printer's Dave Dickinson controversy. Remember, Casey burst onto the scene. Dave was with the Lions, and that fell right into the hole that the NHL left when they were locked out. So people were so into it. We lived the movie Any Given Sunday. I don't know if you've seen that movie where Dennis Quaid being the sort of the older veteran quarterback, and you've got Jamie Foxx, the young, exciting guy who came in, and Quaid gets hurt, Foxx takes over, and which guy should we go with? That movie, it came out around the same time, I thought, this is that movie. And, you know, so fans had something to grasp onto in terms of interest. They were both really good players in their own ways, and the team was very exciting. I went to the Grey Cup that year, didn't win, but it generated a lot of interest, and I think that, and then the Lions were good for a while, and that really pushed people back towards football in Vancouver anyway. And, you know, to see 40 or 50,000 fans for a game at that point wasn't unusual. And it was such an amazing turnaround, but, you know, it didn't last. And so I just happened to catch it right at that time, and it was fun. It really was. I've had a soft spot in my heart for the CFL for a long time, since I was a kid. And, you know, I hope it survives, because I like watching it. I get into debates all the time with people about the Canadian Football League. You'd like to bash it. And I'm like, you don't realize, it's not the NFL. It isn't. I'm not going to make that argument. It's way better than many people give it credit for being. Those guys are terrific athletes, and it's the second best league in the world. I don't think people who pay much attention, or who don't like the CFL, don't pay much attention to it, realizes how good those guys are in terms of their abilities. So hopefully you can get through this rough spot and continue for another 100 years.
It's Rick Ball, play-by-play voice of the Flames on Sportsnet West, and our new CFL insider, I believe.
Yeah.
So take that, whoever the old CFL insider was, you're gone. joining us here in Boomer in the Morning, Will Nault's with us as well. Bill.
Do not quiz me on any players or anything now, because I don't pay as much attention as I used to. It's impossible.
Fair enough.
Doing hockey full-time. But
that's weird, Rick. I was actually going to get your thoughts on the second-string left tackle for the Stampeders, but I guess we'll save that for another day. Rick, just shifting gears to the NHL a little bit, your thought on the league waiting, and it appears to have paid off because of the COVID numbers in the U.S. lead the NHL to two Canadian hub cities in Edmonton and Toronto.
Yeah, the way with an uptick in cases in the States, and specifically in Vegas, I guess we shouldn't be surprised. I always thought Edmonton was I thought Calgary would have been a great choice too, but we just don't have the facilities here that they have in Edmonton with their new rink. So Edmonton always made the most sense to me, even more so than Vancouver in some ways, because they've got a practice facility attached to their main arena. But for some reason, it seemed like Vancouver they wanted. And then when that didn't work out, it seemed natural they'd come to Edmonton. But the fact that Canada's at this point anyway has done a better job of keeping the numbers down, I guess it was a no-brainer on those terms. So it doesn't really matter as far as the fans are concerned. Whether Edmonton or Calgary or Vancouver or Toronto or Vegas or any other city gets the games, if it's down the street two blocks or 4,000 miles away, we're not going anyway as fans. because you can't get into the building. So you're watching on TV regardless. But it's nice to know they seem to be getting more of a concrete plan in place, and we can get this thing rolling. It's going to be weird watching games with no fans in the buildings, but I'm hungry for hockey like anybody else is. So let's get this thing started, and hopefully they can do it safely and hand out the Stanley Cup in a few months.
Well, and I don't want you to get in any trouble, Rick, but if you could maybe pull back the curtain for our listeners, do you know anything about where you're going to be? Are you going to be back in the booth? I know there's going to be a lot of hockey to be played, so they're going to need as many crews as possible. What can you tell us about where Rick Ball is going to be in August?
It's still really very much up in the air. Like, I know there was talk for quite a while that the games would be called out of studios off monitors because they wanted to keep as few people as possible in the actual arenas. I think there's maybe a possibility now the broadcasters, at least the color and play-by-play guys, will be allowed in the rink. But, you know how it is, guys. Every day things change, and that could change 19 times between now and the time they hopefully drop a puck. So it's a long way of saying I have no idea yet anyway exactly what my role might be and whether I'll be, if I am doing games, whether it'll be at Rogers Place or calling it out of the studio somewhere. So hopefully by next week we'll have a better picture, but as of right now it's still very much uncertain for everybody who'd be involved potentially in the TV broadcast side.
Well, I know Derek's never shy to talk about it when we bring him on about games at Edmonton. I guarantee, Rick, he'd be more than 6 feet away from the players in the booth there.
That's funny. Yeah, although the upside is when you do television, if you're the only show, because I don't think I think the American broadcasters would probably do it off monitor, so you'd be the only show, which means you get they have a lower broadcast spot for
the suite level, yeah.
Yeah, which, that's unfortunate. It's such a nice arena. They really, dropped the ball in terms of the broadcast location. So, and I know this is inside baseball and people that pay good money to sit in seats don't care about us, get paid to come in and watch. But, the way I look at it, your single biggest advertisement for your product, if you're a hockey team, is your TV broadcast, right? I mean, more people watch your product or get exposed to it through television than any other means. They never come into the rink by a magnitude of 100, a multiple of 100. So, if you do something, and again, this sounds self-serving, and it probably is, but it's true. And if you do something that makes the broadcast 5% worse because you put the booth 9 miles away from the ice, all you're doing is impacting how people view your product. So that was a bit of a mistake in what is otherwise a really nice arena. So, like I said, it's probably self-serving, and nobody out there cares except anybody who happens to call games for a living, but that's the way I feel about it. So I'm confident when they do the new arena here in Calgary that that they'll get that right. Because the thing about the Saddle Dome, as far as television is concerned, the broadcast location is terrific. You're in a great spot. You're not too high. You're over the ice. It's a great place to call a game. Even though the building is old and needs to be replaced, there are very few complaints about where you watch the game from when you're calling a game on television or on the radio. And, that makes our job so much easier, and it makes it a lot more fun to do.
We also have some dates, it looks like, finally. TSN's Bob McKenzie was kind of the first one to put it out there today on Twitter, July 13th, which we kind of knew and expected. So 10 days from right now is when the Phase 3 and or training camp will begin. July 26th, teams arrive in hub cities. So Calgary would travel to Edmonton. And then August 1st is the ideal or target date for the games to begin. I'm just curious, Rick, what you think or what your thoughts are of the Flames heading into this play-in round against the Winnipeg Jets. And you've been off for so long as a player. It's not your typical training camp. You don't have three days of two-a-days and then right into exhibition games. You kind of got to ramp yourself up with inter-squad games and whatever else. But what is your thought on how the Flames are going to approach training camp, and I guess what are you looking for as the team gets set to really kind of ramp things back up here?
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day. Like, how do you analyze the matchup at this point, right? I mean, you can't. Is it possible to go on what was happening before they shut everything down? The Jets were getting unbelievable goaltending and playing way above where I think anybody thought they'd be this season with all the issues they had on their blue line coming into the year. And Calgary seemed to be finding its game a little bit too, you know, in the few weeks leading up to the lockdown. You know, that top line was starting to go a little bit more. Gaudreau was looking more like himself. But does that weigh into the equation in any way under these circumstances when they've been off for months? Or is it like starting a whole new season? I think it probably is. So, you know, the good news is for the teams that had serious injury issues. But, you know, other than that, I roll the dice. I have no idea how it's going to look once they get back to playing. So, you know, this is a unique and probably one-time circumstance, and good luck trying to predict what's going to happen because I have no idea. I just know that, you know, it's going to be fun because it's two Canadian teams. So that'll be an interesting battle just for that reason alone. But, yeah, I'm as curious as anybody to see how it plays out because I really have no clue what we're going to see once they hit the ice.
What about in goal? I think that's the one topic for many Flames fans that they still find themselves wrestling with. It was the second half, somewhat of a slowdown again by David Rittich, but you know, all this time off, he could go back to October, November, David Rittich, which we know has been lights out in the 2-3 years he's been the Flames' number 1A or 1B in terms of a goaltender. Then Cam Talbot was certainly finding his game the second half, and it's also a best of five where, as you just talked about, Rick, you know, the other side, the team's featuring a very good goaltender and a guy that could be the runaway Vezina winner in Connor Hellebuyck. And I guess I ask you about goaltending because in a best of five, you know, you get a couple of good performances from your goaltender and that can completely change the series.
Yeah, it is that's so true. And, you know, again, how those guys are going to perform, it's not like you've got a body of work in the last 3 weeks that you can look at it, right? So, yeah, maybe we'll get first half Rittich and he'll be terrific. And you know, maybe Cam Talbot is outstanding. And, you know, Hellebuyck can be a great goalie. But in a short series after a couple months off, your guess is as good as mine. But you're right. Those best of fives, they used to do those, right? Like, that's not unusual. You know, it's different because it's going to be an extra round to get into the playoffs. But think back to the 80s. They had best of fives to start to play in the first round. So upsets are a lot easier, especially in hockey in a short series, because one guy can steal a game. It really is a unique sport that way, where you can get badly outplayed. One guy can be terrific and you can win, right? It's hard for almost any other sport that I can think of, team sport anyway, for that to happen because you don't have a guy preventing the other team from scoring in the way that a hockey goalie can. So you get a hot goalie in a short series and that can be the difference, can be the single biggest difference between winning and losing. So it's obviously going to be critical for all of those guys, whoever winds up playing the bulk of the games, to be good, because in five games, if you're not, it's over before you know it.
Now, of course, the other debate that Flames fans might have themselves wrestling with here the next, month and change. Rick, just any thoughts on the outcome of the NHL draft lottery and the fact that the Flames lose to the Winnipeg Jets in the best of five? They've got a 1-8 chance of the top pick in the 2020 draft.
Yeah, I thought about that, right? You know, I mean, that's a consolation prize. You obviously want to win the Stanley Cup, but I know there's been a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth over the draft lottery. It's an imperfect science, and it's been such a crazy year. I didn't lose a lot of sleep over it. You know, I do understand Brian Burke's point. Like, it should have just been the teams that aren't in, the seven teams that aren't going to play, instead of allowing some of the teams that are in. But I also get it from their perspective, teams that from that 16 to 24 spot that were on the bubble going, hey, we might not have been in anyway, and then now we're not going to get a chance for the first overall pick. So I don't think there was a perfect way to do it. It is odd, though, to have a placeholder team holding a number one draft pick, but that's the way you know, if you're going to have a lottery, you know, if you got 2%, you know, just throw out some numbers, if you got a 2% chance of getting the first overall pick, another team's got a 50% chance, the team with 2% still has a chance, and it's going to happen sometimes. So you know, I'm not sure what the perfect formula would have been, but it is a bit odd for sure. And yeah, I thought about that too for the teams that do get knocked out in the playing round. it's sitting out there. It's certainly there's certainly a consolation prize that could wind up being a pretty good one if you wind up getting that first pick.
No, I know Ryan's got some hard-hitting questions to kind of finish this thing off. Rick Paul is our guest, the play-by-play voice for the Flames and Sportsnet West, joining us right now on Boomer in the Morning. Rick, before we get to the hard-hitting questions from Ryan, I got to ask you one myself. What have you been up to in quarantine? What's kept you busy, Mr. Ball?
Well, I've been watching a lot of World's Strongest Man competition.
Getting some inspiration, are you?
I find it is my favorite ginned up novelty sporting event. I love it. You know, and you go back and you watch they'll run the marathon sometimes. They'll play like 10 of them back to back, and you can watch the old school ones from the '70s and through the era of Magnuson and up to Hafþór Bjornsson and Brian Shaw now are the two big guys. And I actually watched live Hafþór Bjornsson in Iceland. He streamed it, deadlift 1,105 pounds.
Jeez.
So now that my gym is reopening, I can get back to my quest of beating the world deadlift record. I was close before it shut down. But
you're only about 5 pounds off, I heard. 1,100 was you. So that 1,105 really just kind of threw you off.
Well, he went to five. Well, because Eddie Hall, this is how much I'm into this. You guys, I'm not kidding when I said Eddie Hall set the record of 500 kilos. A year ago at a competition, and Hafþór went to 501 kilos, which is 1,102.2 pounds or whatever it is. So it's just a little, he just went 1 kilogram over, and it's pretty damn exciting. And now they've got a feud, and they're going to box each other. A couple of 400-pound strongmen going to get into the boxing ring and have a fight. So I've got that to look forward to if this lockdown continues.
There's not going to be a lot of room left in that ring when those guys are in there.
Yeah, they're going to slim down to like 380 each. So, I'm not sure what that weight class. You've got heavyweight, super heavyweight, and I don't know.
King Kong.
Trucks. That's what they'd be called, trucks. Just throwing absolute haymakers.
I think we need to live stream Rick Ball watching World's Strongest Man events. That's better than watching guys deadlift streaming. Your enthusiasm and passion is just it's infectious, Rick.
You know what I watched last night, and I'd seen it before, it's on Amazon Prime, is that Ayrton Senna documentary, just called Senna. It came out a few years ago, and I watched it then, but I hadn't seen it in a while. It's so good. It's such
a
great story.
Did you watch the F1 series?
Yeah, both years. Terrific.
I haven't seen that. Everyone loves it, though. The access is
I heard year two
awesome.
Wasn't as good, though, Rick.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing, right? And a lot of the guys are the same. Yeah. They switch teams, but a lot of the drivers are the same. So, but the first year especially was really good. They had such great access, and it's so beautifully shot and put together. It looks like a movie. Really, I'm not a huge auto racing guy. I mean, I pay attention a little bit, but that series was outstanding. So if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it.
And how's the COVID beard?
I looked like for the longest time I started to look like Tevye from Fiddler on the Roof, and then I finally realized that I'm getting mistaken for a homeless guy too often, so I shaved it down to its normal length. Okay. You seem disappointed.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, there becomes a point where it's tough to participate in society even in a pandemic because a beard's so outlandish, but I also I love seeing the chaos of the beard or a weird mustache. I understand your plight, Rick. It's thrilling and also disheartening at the same time. It's a journey, isn't it?
It was actually, I went for Cassie Campbell Pascal did a, she's been doing these Peloton events, right, on the bike, but I don't have a Peloton. So I went out and ran to show my support for her. And I was actually having trouble breathing through my beard. I'm not lying. And I thought, okay, well, it's got to go. That's ridiculous. So it's not completely gone. It's back down to where it normally is. Although I have to admit, some days I do miss it because you're attached. It's like having a pet on your face.
Yeah, there you go. See? Yeah. The insulating layer is not as needed for summer, so you've got time to build it up for the winter and fall ahead. Okay, the serious business. We've left this too long. We're short on time. We thank you for yours. We are concocting a 16-cocktail bracket that will launch Monday morning. I have 17 cocktails. We only have room for 16. I don't know whether we should do a play-in, whether we should have listeners poll on it, but I'm going to quickly list the bubble candidates, and you tell me if there's an easy one to dispatch here or if there's one that absolutely cannot go. Sangria.
Mixed drinks? So they like, okay.
No highballs. No highballs, and so it's a cocktail. And beyond that, there aren't a ton of rules. We punted the Irish whiskey the Irish coffee earlier today. The Greyhound and the Mai Tai didn't make the cut. The Caprina and the Daiquiri didn't make it. But we did include the Long Island today. We included the Negroni. The Bellini is very controversial, delicious, but not massive accessibility to the people. Maybe it's only once a year you have one, although damn, it's good. And we found that many people on the prairies grew up with their first cocktail being a paralyzer. So as stomach churning as that may be, a lot of familiarity amongst our listenership. Any of those scream they don't belong. Sangria, I just don't know if we have room.
Paralyzer, something like that's more high schoolish, right? That's the kind of thing you put together when you first try booze. so if I got to punt one, I'd say the Paralyzer, but I'm not a big cocktail guy. I'm more of a red wine or a beer guy. But I think punt the Paralyzer and make sure the Pina Colada is somewhere on the list.
Pina Colada's in, and our heavyweights would be considered the Margarita, the Caesar, which apparently was born in Calgary, Moscow Mule, getting a lot of love with.
That it was born Caesars. That's why they call it Caesars.
Yeah.
That's why they call it
there
the
you go.
Yeah.
Old Fashioned, Mojito, Mimosa, things like that. Those are the staples. Those will be the top seeds. But really tough to get down to number. I don't mind your Paralyzer analogy, or I guess tact here. Yes, we all know about them, but we've grown through that phase and we can leave them out of the tournament. I just hope the listeners don't get upset.
Yeah, I think the Paralyzer is the kind of drink. You know how you have one bad experience with a booze, you never drink it again? I think the Paralyzer for many people would be that drink.
Okay, I like it. We'll take that into consideration, and we look forward to seeing you back at work soon. Please, beard or not, just let's get some hockey here.
I do too. There's only so many World's Strongest Man in the lots. I think I've seen them all now too, so I'm going to repeat. All right,
thank
boys.
You. Good chatting.
I'll get working on my deadlift. We'll talk to you next week. Hopefully, it'll be closer to 1,100 pounds.
There Love you go. Thanks, Rick.
Okay, kids. Bye.
Rick Ball, World's Strongest Man enthusiast.